Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a bit snarky about all things books. If you like the show, I'd really love your support. Spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts, or get bonus podcast episodes by supporting the podcast on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Let's get rolling. Hey everyone, welcome to a mini episode of Sarah's Bookshelves Live. These episodes feature book bloggers or Instagrammers or regular readers that apply to be on the show and focus solely on book recommendations in 20 minutes or less. Today's guest is Elizabeth Chapman. She and her husband live in Roanoke, Virginia with their two children and their golden retriever. She talks about books as part of her job as a high school English teacher, and she also blogs about her family, her job, the blending of those two things, and, of course, her recent reads at Teaching Sam and Scout. Y'all, I know I just said that episodes are 20 minutes or less, and normally I will edit these mini episodes down to be 20 minutes or less. However, this episode's going to be a little bit longer because I think that Elizabeth and I had some really great discussion about various books as well as reading in general. And I think that her perspective as a teacher added a lot to the discussion, and I don't want to cut a lot of it out. So this mini episode is going to be maybe three quarters of a full length episode, if that's okay with y'all. All right. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
Thanks so much for being here. We've got some awesome books to talk about today, many of which I've also read, so we can have good discussion.
It was hard to choose books because I get so many of my recommendations from you and your guests, so it was hard to find some that hadn't already been talked about.
You know what? I never thought about that before, and that's going to become a bigger and bigger problem the longer this podcast is on the air.
Yeah. It was really hard.
Thank you for pointing that out to me. I'm going to have to try to figure out a way to make that easier on everybody. All right. So tell me a little bit about your reading taste.
I think I was born a reader. I loved reading even as a really young kid. Actually, kind of a funny little fact is that my dad read me all of the Babysitter's Club books from the time I was like 4 to probably 6 or 7.
Oh, he read them aloud.
Which is just kind of funny. He read them aloud.
That's
and my dad
so
and I still know all the characters, and that's kind of our thing. But as a little kid, I was the one that was reading during recess and getting comments on my report card that said I was too busy reading and not paying attention in class. And then in high school, as happens often, I think I just kind of lost that because I had to do schoolwork or I had to read things for class and started kind of taking shortcuts and doing cliff notes or whatever as I needed to. And that, of course, followed me into college. But I still loved reading, which is part of what led me to be a high school English teacher.
Wait a second. I have to stop you right here. This is fascinating to me because Sarah Hildreth was on the podcast a couple weeks ago. She's also a high school English teacher. She also found shortcuts and really tried to avoid doing her assigned reading in high school and went on to become an English teacher. This is crazy to me.
I tell my students all the time, I'm like, I know how you cheat on the reading because I did it too.
So how did you turn the corner from not doing your reading to becoming an English teacher?
To be honest, I have to credit, and I've heard some of your other guests do this, but I have to credit blogs and Instagram and now podcasts. I'm like really community and relationally driven, and those things made it more of like a social thing for me. So I was all of a sudden starting to hear about all these great books and see teachers doing really cool things with new literature in the classrooms. And all of a sudden, I just had all these books I really wanted to read again and started making it a priority.
It's that Bookstagram peer pressure.
Yes, it's real.
So what types of books do you like to read?
Well, one of the big things was I had to kind of accept right away what I like and what I don't like. I don't really care for fantasy. This is another fun fact, which is I've never read Harry Potter.
Oh, you and me. Well, you and me both, kind of. Well, I've read the first one and I never cared to read the rest of them.
My 8-year-old is reading it right now, and I say I'm going to read it with him, but I'm just not very excited about it. And then I also just don't like a lot of the classics. I teach fewer and fewer classics every year because those were books that turned me off from reading rather than made me want to read.
Right.
And so once I kind of accepted this is not my thing, then I was able to find a groove of what I did like and roll with that. And it made my reading life much, much better. So I call it like realistic fiction, books that make me think, but not too hard is kind of the goal.
Yes.
I like a book that has some research in it, not necessarily presented as research, but that I can just tell that the author spent a lot of time and did their work to write it. But I really also like a good story. So something that's both character and story driven. I'm a fan of nonfiction narratives and books by journalists and things like that. And then I use this term, it's kind of a popular term in the English teacher world, but it's calling books mirrors and windows. Have you heard that before?
No, but I can see the metaphor for this. But tell us about it.
Yeah. Books that are mirrors reflect a part of yourself and they help you build your own identity. So those are like classic coming of age books and things that help you not feel alone in whatever circumstances you're going through, which is really awesome for all readers, but especially for teenage readers like my students. And then books that are mirrors offer a view into someone else's life experience that's really different from yours. And that has become just something I'm so passionate about and I have loved so much, is that I live in my hometown. I teach high school at a predominantly white middle-class area, but books have allowed me, I feel like, just to experience such a broader picture of the world and of different people's life experiences. So I really like books that do that.
I love that terminology, mirror and window. I had never thought about it that way, but that is perfect. I feel like English teachers who are so used to talking about books to students, you all come up with these great things.
Yes. Well, and again, I can't take credit for that. I don't know where it came from, but I will say probably like 4 or 5 years ago, I posted on my blog my curriculum for my 9th, 10th, and 11th grade English classes. And someone commented and said, "Did you ever realize that every book you teach is by a white man?"
Oh.
And I was really convicted by it.
Sure. Yeah.
So slowly but surely through my personal reading, definitely, but then also through the books that I'm teaching at school, I've been able to kind of diversify that and make it, you know, mirrors for all types of kids, because not every kid has the same thing that they need reflected, and then also hopefully windows into some different life experiences for them.
I love that. And I feel like, at least based on my conversation with you and with Sarah a couple weeks ago, that teachers are becoming more and more cognizant about diversifying the books on their curriculum. And I can say that my experience, I went to an all-girls school, so we definitely had female authors on our curriculum.
Okay.
Probably all white, though. I'm trying to think back. Maybe we read some Toni Morrison, although I'm not sure I did.
Yeah, or like Alice Walker.
Oh, you know what? I did read The Color Purple.
But it's not very much.
Yeah, no, it really was not much.
And they're kind of token books that get thrown into the curriculum as the one piece.
And the same token books are in every curriculum. All right. As usual, Elizabeth is going to share 2 old books she loves, 2 new books she loves, 1 book she does not love, and 1 new release that she is excited about. Let's talk about the first old book you love.
So the first one I chose was a really easy pick. It's This Is How It Always Is by Lori Frankel. It came out in the very beginning of 2017, and it is about a family that has 5 boys. And I think it's kind of the classic, like they keep trying to have a little girl. By the time he's 2 or 3 years old, their youngest, Claude, is wanting to be a girl, essentially. He's like wearing dresses and carrying a purse to preschool. And the parents, Rosie and Penn are their names, don't think it's a huge deal. He'll probably grow out of it. But he doesn't. And as he gets older and they have to kind of make some decisions about his identity, they are open-minded and they want to love him or her for who their child is. But at the same time, they have a lot of fear about how hard his life will be if he chooses to live it as a female. So they end up moving and they let Claude become Poppy in this new city. But they don't tell anybody that he was born a boy. They just let him be a girl in this new city. And they have all sorts of things that they have to grapple with. This was a huge window book for me in that it made me think about transgender from a new angle as a parent. And I really related to the mom, particularly in this, of just thinking, like, we as parents just want what's best for our kids. We want to love them. We want to do the right thing for them. And sometimes circumstances come up or things come up that we weren't prepared for. And we have to just make what we think is the best decision at the time. And sometimes there's consequences for that. I loved the marriage. Rosie and Penn's relationship is probably one of the most accurate depictions I've ever seen in like contemporary literature of marriage and co-parenting.
They were so relatable.
Yes, their relationship was messy. It wasn't perfect.
Right. As a family, I felt like they were dealing with a situation that is not relatable to, I don't know, 95% of humans, right? I don't know what the exact number is for that, but it's not a lot.
Yeah.
Yet they came across as being so relatable. I could picture myself
absolutely
in the situation. And funny enough, this year, there is a child at my children's elementary school who has decided that he would like to be a girl. But we're dealing with the bathroom situation and all of those things.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking about this book. And it was not in any way jarring to me to hear about this because I had read this book.
Absolutely. This was the book that as soon as I finished it, I was like, every mom should read this book because it's in some ways something that we don't think about very much. Like you said, it is still relatively uncommon to some extent, but I think it's becoming more and more common and we should think about it and be prepared for it instead of just being hit with it.
Yes, absolutely. As I mentioned, I love this book too. And the other reason I really loved it was because I felt like I felt every emotion in the rainbow of emotions while I was reading it. And I love a book that will make me do that. It made me cry. It made me laugh. It made me happy. It made me sad. It made me angry. I felt for these people, all of the things.
Yes, totally felt the same way. It's heavy, but there's also some really light parts.
Yeah.
And I did find out after I finished it that the author, Lori Frankel, does have a transgender child. So I think she really wrote from her perspective. I think that's why it comes across as so authentic.
I, like you, learned it after I read the book. And as I was reading, I wondered if she did have a child with gender dysphoria.
Yep.
All right. So that was This Is How It Always Is by Lori Frankel. And that came out January of 2017. Also a fantastic book club selection if anyone is looking for those.
Definitely.
Tell me about the second old book you love.
Okay. It's almost a hard one to put into a category of love because it's so hard.
I get what you mean.
Yeah. It's called Dope Sick by Beth Macy. It came out about a year and a half ago, and it is about the opioid epidemic in the United States. It's nonfiction. And one of the reasons that I was originally drawn to it, and I think part of why I find it so powerful, is that Beth Macy, the author, actually lives in my hometown. And it was a culmination of her years as a journalist covering heroin in our area, like in my neighborhood, basically.
In your backyard. Yeah.
Yes. And she does a ton of research. The book is really, really heavy on the research related to everything from like the history of opioids and then big pharma and doctors and law enforcement. So there's a ton of research, but it's also really, really story driven. And specifically, she tells the story of these four families, all that have teenagers that got mixed up in heroin and opioids. Some of them from classic peer pressure, their friends selling it, and then some from like getting a prescription after they got their wisdom teeth taken out.
Right.
But those kids were all high school kids when the story took place. And it was in the high schools where I was teaching at the time.
So you taught in the Happy Valley area?
It's Hidden Valley.
Hidden Valley,
Hidden Valley,
sorry.
Is the high school. Yeah, no, that's fine. I taught at Cave Spring, which was the school right next door to Hidden Valley.
Okay.
And one of the kind of more minor characters, if you can use that term, in the book was one of my students.
Oh my gosh.
And then now I teach at a specialty school and my students come from both of those high schools.
Okay. And y'all, if you have not read Dope Sick, I read this one as well and I thought it was amazing. Again, love is the wrong word, but
right.
You get what I mean. I thought that it was just so powerful because you kind of think, oh yeah, this opioid epidemic, it goes on in certain areas, but not my area. Well, this was a pretty high class area that this was happening in.
Yeah. So she describes it as manicured lawns and two-car garages and parents that are doctors and insurance agents. And, you know, these were kids that were making good grades and had parents that were on the PTA. And, you know, the kids were athletes. So she certainly plays that up. And I'll get to this, but I teach this book and my students sometimes take issue with some of the way that she presents the area.
Oh, interesting. What parts of it did they take issue with?
They just thought it was a little bit generalized.
Okay.
Just the fact that, yes, that exists, but there's plenty of people that don't come from kind of the quote perfect family in their schools and in this area. And it was actually a pretty cool thing because one of the things I teach, it's an 11th grade rhetoric class, and we talk a lot about writer agenda and bias. And we talked about how we don't think it was malicious that she made this generalization, but she used that to make the point, like you just said, that this is not just an inner city or just a really poor rural thing.
Yes.
Right. And so she almost had to pick and choose the details that she chose about our neighborhood to make this bigger statement for the book. And that was a cool thing for them to realize. And they wouldn't have, you know, if they didn't know firsthand the neighborhoods that she's talking about.
Well, I think it's a very observant and nuanced thing for high school kids to pick up on, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm hopeful that they see that in that book and then they can take it to some of the other things that they read that they don't have that firsthand experience with.
Sure. This book terrified me.
Oh, me too. As a parent?
I mean, we were, you know, drinking and I guess some people were smoking weed when I was coming along. And the problems now are just so much greater. And I'm just hoping that this thing dies a quick death before my children get old enough to possibly come into contact with this stuff. Or I'm sure there'll be something out there that's even worse by then, which is equally terrifying.
Exactly. One of the things she says in the very beginning of the book is that when she first started researching, nobody wanted their name associated with heroin or opioid.
Right.
And by the time she finished, all of these mothers and families said, yes, use my real name, tell my real story, because the only way we're going to stop this is kind of if we scare people and we make them realize this is real and it's out there. That was my motivation for wanting to teach it, was thinking, you know what? Yeah, this might be scary for kids or it might be kind of triggering, but what's the harm in that? You know, the worst that happens is they decide not to try this for the first time because they know what could happen.
I love that you're teaching it. I think that's awesome. And I think that's amazing that these people were willing to kind of out themselves for the greater good and put a name with this faceless thing.
Yes, absolutely. The kids did struggle a little bit. I don't know if you found this when you read it, but it is pretty dense. Like her style is kind of all over. She'll tell a little bit of story and then give a lot of information. And then a little bit more of the story. And so some of them had to kind of jump around. We actually talked about the art of the skim when it's appropriate.
Ah.
And so some of them had to jump around a little bit, but they, in the end, I think they really liked it. Another book that I just love and I have to kind of add into this category is Columbine by Dave Cullen.
Yes.
Probably one of my like all time. I just think it's so important. But I would kind of pair this with that in that I think if you're a teacher or a parent or even young people, like this just is the world that they live in. And even though we would prefer not to think about it, I think this is a really important thing to be learning about and talking about.
I agree. I listened to Columbine on audio and that would be a great pairing. Definitely with a recovery book or two in between though.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So that was Dope Sick by Beth Macy. And I co-signed that one as well. I thought it was outstanding. All right. Let's talk about the first new book you love.
So this is a sharp turn from Dope Sick, but this is a good palate cleanser.
I think we need to make this turn, though.
I loved Evie Drake Starts Over by Linda Holmes.
And y'all, if you are like, oh, wait, we just talked about Evie Drake. Last week, you all heard Claire Gibson talk about this book, but in a different context. So now we're going to hear the flip side of the coin. All right, let's hear it, Elizabeth.
So I do have to say, you know how sometimes there's just sort of serendipity with a book? You just read it at just the right time.
Yes.
And I think that was it for me. I just adored this book, maybe more than I should have. I keep using the word delight to explain it. I just thought it was so fun and cute, but also, as is my preference, had just the right amount of meat to make me think about some heavier things as well.
Yep.
The story is Evie Drake is in her mid-30s and her husband dies unexpectedly in a car accident on the exact same day that she had the car packed and was planning to leave him. And that happens like first page of the book. And then right around the year mark of her husband's death, Dean Tenney, who is a Major League Baseball pitcher who has mysteriously lost his ability to throw, moves to town, and he's trying to kind of hide out from the media and ends up subletting an apartment from Evie on her property. This is a rom-com. It's a romance, and you can probably figure out kind of where it goes from there. But I just found the story so cute. I really loved that this was a grown-up with baggage romance instead of my typical like teenager's first love or 20-somethings with nothing that's ever happened to them before. I really loved that this was a complicated romance.
Yes.
And also, my sister, who is in her early 30s, lost her husband, totally, totally different circumstances, but about a year ago. And I really thought that the way that Holmes portrayed kind of this weird 30-something widow with no children character really, really well.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I've never seen that character before.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's not a typical literary character.
No, usually if it's a widow, she's older.
Yeah. Or has children,
right,
and she's navigating how to take care of her kids. And so I've seen my sister kind of walk through that last year. And like I said, totally different from Evie Drake's circumstances and situation. But I just thought some of what it is like to be in that stage of life unexpectedly was done really, really well. It's clean, you know, for a rom-com. There's nothing super intense to it. So I thought it was great. I loved it.
I agree. I really liked it too. Just like your experience with it, this was the right book at the right time for me. I had just finished The Only Plane in the Sky.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sure y'all have heard me talk about this on my social media, and you will be hearing from the author in an upcoming episode. I've already recorded it. And the book was amazing. It's going to be one of my top books of the year, but man, it gutted me, and I needed something to pull me out of that.
Yes.
And Evie Drake was perfect.
This is perfect for that.
Yeah, I generally have trouble with rom-coms. Sometimes I find them cheesy. And I thought the dialogue was smart and snappy. And I also liked that, like you said, that had enough meat and deeper issues that it covered to make me connect with it. And if y'all like quirky small town types of books, this is one of those as well. So that was Evie Drake Starts Over by Linda Holmes. And if you don't know who Linda Holmes is, she's the host of Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's a podcast on NPR. So she's got a pretty big following independent of this book. All right. Tell me about the second new book you love.
Okay. So this one is brand new. It's called The Grace Year by Kim Liggett. And it is marketed to young adults, but it is meaty. In fact, I just finished this. It came out like a week ago, so I kind of sped through it. Well, I'll start by saying a lot of language arts teachers that I follow on Instagram were raving about this, and they were comparing it to Lord of the Flies, The Hunger Games. There's also a lot of The Handmaid's Tale element to it.
Yeah, that's the one I saw.
Yes. It's this fictional city called Garner County. I always imagine it to be in the future, but I'm not sure if that's right or not. But it's kind of dystopian. The girls are veiled at this ceremony at the start of their 16th year, or when they're all 16 years old. And if a man gives you a veil, then you're going to be committed to him as his wife. But before that, you're sent off, all the 16-year-old girls in the county, to this kind of compound out in the woods, far away from everyone else, to spend a whole year, they call that the grace year, to get rid of your, quote, magic. And magic is not super defined. I thought this was going to be kind of fantasy-ish because of that word, but it wasn't. It's basically the power that women have, particularly young girls, right on like the cusp of adulthood or womanhood, where they are both innocent and pure, but also sort of coming into their sexuality and the ability to make a man desire them and have that power over a man. And not just that, but also the power that they have over women to make other women, particularly older women, jealous or envious of their youth. So they go off into the woods, they spend this year, and not only do they have to survive out there, but it turns out that they're also really pretty terrible to each other. Whereas instead of it being like this bonding time for girls, they don't support each other and they don't build each other up.
As 16-year-old girls are known to do sometimes.
Yes. So the book is really fast paced. It's got kind of that action packed Hunger Games feel to it. But actually, one of my very favorite parts about it was at the end, I listened to this on an audiobook, and at the end, there is an interview with the author, and she talks about her motivation for it and kind of where the story came from. And she got really emotional just talking about our society, and especially it's very timely for where we are in our culture today, how women are prey for men, but also how awful other women are to each other.
Yeah.
And there's some really big messages about that that I just loved and I feel like would be really meaningful for anybody. But I definitely did like this for my students.
Sure.
It would connect really well with Lord of the Flies. It's in a lot of ways kind of a female version of that. The author talked about how William Golding said that Lord of the Flies had to be only boys because girls weren't capable of the things that the boys did.
How wrong he was.
Uh-huh. Anybody that's been around teenage girls knows that it's worse.
Talk about not doing your research.
Exactly. So I've recommended this to a few of my students already just to see what they think of it. And I do a social justice literature circle or kind of book clubs unit. And I'm excited to add this in because I think it'll appeal to a different kind of kid, somebody that does like a little bit more action or something a little bit more fast paced, but it still has some really big statements about society.
This sounds kind of fascinating. I don't normally read a lot of YA, although I just finished a YA, which I really loved. So now I'm kind of like opening myself up again to maybe reading some YA.
Yeah, I didn't even feel like it was super YA-ish. I really, really liked it. And I actually was thinking that the only people I've really seen talking about it are high school and middle school teachers.
Oh, interesting.
But I hope that it gets some attention in kind of the bigger Bookstagram circuit. And it's really, really well written too. It has potential to be kind of too much like some of those other books, but somehow it connects to all of those, but it's really original.
Do you think that The Handmaid's Tale is kind of the reincarnation of Gone Girl, like with the copycats?
Oh, that's so interesting.
There's so many, I feel like. And I feel like, you know, there was that period where there was so many Gone Girl copycats or wannabe copycats. And then now I feel like there's been so many copycats of The Handmaid's Tale, and not flat out copycats, but clearly inspired by, you know?
Sure. Maybe. I don't know. That's an interesting point.
Like The Power and Red Clocks.
Yeah. And this book was compared to The Power too, which I have not read The Power.
I haven't either. And I also did read that it's been optioned by Universal to be a movie.
Yes. Is it Elizabeth Banks, I think?
Yes, it's Elizabeth Banks. All right. So that was The Grace Year by Kim Liggett. And tell me about the book you did not love. This will be a good discussion because I loved this book. So I can't wait to hear why you didn't like it.
Okay, I'm anxious to hear what you loved about it. Okay, so I chose Normal People by Sally Rooney. This book was super buzzy back in the spring, and I was really excited to read it because I had heard that it was a love story about an unlikely pair. It's Connell and Marianne, and they met in high school and essentially kind of grew up together through college and into adulthood, which is basically my love story. But when I started reading it, there were very few similarities to my own love story.
Probably, yeah. Or one would hope, I guess.
Yes, exactly. And I have to say, I didn't quit reading it. So that's got to be something. I guess it intrigued me enough that I kept reading it. But I just found the characters very unlikable. I thought they were boring and angsty, but almost to an exaggerated extreme. Like, I just thought it was too much. And then my biggest complaint was it was called a love story, but to me, it was way more based on sexual chemistry and sexual tension than any sort of deeper heart level. So it didn't feel like a love story at all to me. I felt like both characters were really self-absorbed. I felt like they were really self-absorbed. I didn't feel like the relationship ever went beyond like a really surface, selfish level into a mature relationship where you put someone else above yourself and you're willing to work for the relationship. I just was never rooting for them as a couple. In fact, I thought they would be better off not together the whole time. I don't know. Did you go into it thinking it was a love story?
No. And when you started off talking about it by saying a love story, I was like, oh, I don't know if that's a love story.
Yeah, I think that's probably where it went wrong for me.
I think it's more a dark effed up love story.
Yes, which it is. And what I would say is I definitely know people that this relationship would be a lot like what they have experienced. So it didn't resonate for me, but I do think it's probably pretty accurate for a lot of people.
Okay, so the one thing that I feel differently about with their relationship was I definitely think there was a sexual chemistry, a very strong one. But I also think that because Connell was sort of the poor but popular kid, this is in high school, and Marianne is the rich but outcast kid.
Right.
That when they got together, just the two of them, for some strange reason, they could each be their full open selves only with each other.
Yes. But they kept letting other people and outside influences separate them from and like not let them be together.
They did. That didn't bother me because I felt like that's high school.
Yeah.
How much do you do in high school just for appearances?
Sure.
Like that to me rung true about high school.
But they never outgrew it.
That's true. Very true.
And that's what bothered me. I get that in high school. Like I thought the beginning, they meet because Connell's mom works for Marianne's family as a cleaning lady, which I thought was a neat dynamic. And then the relationship ends really abruptly because he doesn't want his friends to find out. And I liked that. But then it was like they never outgrew it and got into the mature, I want to be with this person because they make me better. They just kept kind of missing each other.
So do you feel like the characters did not evolve and that bugged you?
Yes.
Okay, I see that.
They changed, but they didn't grow up, I guess.
Progress.
Yeah.
Maybe they had some lateral moves.
Yes, exactly.
There's certain books that I read that I know some people are going to hate. And there's certain books that I read where I'm like, this is going to be a crowd pleaser. This was a book that I personally loved. I can go dark, though. I love dark stuff. And I don't have to like my characters, but I knew that some people would not like this. And sure enough, it was a book of the month pick when it came out. And it was definitely the divisive love-hate kind of choice.
Yeah, it's been pretty polarizing.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to ask you, did you notice and did it bug you that she didn't put quotation marks around dialogue?
I did notice. It did not bother me. And I normally don't like it kind of experimental formatting kinds of things. But that in particular, I don't know why it didn't bother me, but it didn't. But I know that that did bother some people.
I got used to it, but I thought it was such a strange choice.
I do agree. Why do authors and or publishers make that choice? What's the point of it?
Right. I can't I mean, I'm kind of bitter towards this book anyways, but I can't think of a reason that it actually contributed to the story. I've never read anything by Sally Rooney, so I don't know if that's just her style, like maybe kind of a trademark or something. I don't know.
I have not read any of her other books, but I am planning to read, I say that now, but you know how plans go with books, right?
Right.
I'm planning to read Conversations with Friends this December when I always stop reading new releases and go back and read the older stuff.
I like that. I did hear that this is going to be adapted for Hulu.
Oh, no, I hadn't heard that. Interesting.
Yes, next year.
That's Normal People by Sally Rooney. Came out in April of this year. All right, let's talk about the new release you're excited about.
I'm really excited about this one, and it's getting a lot of hype. It's Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reid. It's coming out, I think, New Year's Eve.
Okay, let's stop for 1 second. Is that the strangest publication date?
Yes.
Why would you release a book on New Year's Eve? I don't understand this. And that was not the original date. It was originally supposed to come out January 7th.
Yeah. Well, I will say that it made me think, okay, well, this will for sure be my first read of 2020.
Sure, yeah.
I'll just download it that night and start it on January 1st. Maybe because people are going to be off on January 1st, so people can start reading.
Maybe. That's true. I just thought that was strange. I'd love to hear the rationale behind that.
From what I can tell about the book, it's about a successful mother. It seems like she works in, am I wrong, like the blog, Instagram, lifestyle brand industry?
I'm not sure. I have not gotten that far yet.
Well, again, this is just from like the blurbs. I'm picturing like a Rachel Hollis. She's motivational, power woman, and I think she has like a presence somehow. And she hires a nanny who happens to be a Black woman in her 20s. And the nanny is out grocery shopping with this other woman's 2-year-old little boy one night. And she is basically accused of kidnapping this child by a security guard. And the confrontation is recorded by somebody standing close by and kind of goes viral. And so the two women, the mother and the nanny unite to try to right this injustice, I guess. Does that sound like the summary that you've heard?
Yeah.
And then the Amazon preview says that it talks about the stickiness of transactional relationships, what it means to make someone family, the complicated reality of being a grown-up, and the consequences of doing the right thing for the wrong reason, which totally checks all the boxes for me. I like a book about a mom. I like a book that makes me think. It's reminding me a little bit of That Kind of Mother by Rumen Alam, I think, which I thought was kind of a slow read, but I enjoyed, and also a little bit of Small Great Things by Jodi Picoult, which is like one of my all-time favorite books. So I'm very excited for this one.
And Annie Jones rated it 5 stars too.
Which is a big deal.
Yes, for me as well. And she said, this was the comparison she made. She said it was The Nanny Diaries meets Americana.
Oh, yes. I love that.
And the hype for this book is so off the charts that it would make me really nervous normally, but seeing who the hype is coming from in this case settles my nerves a little bit. Like the fact that Annie Jones rated it 5 stars, and I think Anne Bogle shared it on a Patreon episode of One Great Book. So she liked it. And I think Liberty Hardy really liked it.
And it's a debut novel, right?
It is, yes. All right. So that was Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed, and that is coming out on New Year's Eve of this year. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for coming on. I really appreciate it. This has been an awesome discussion.
Thank you. I loved it. I could talk about books all day.
Me too. Before you go, tell everyone where they can find you online.
Okay, so my blog is called Teaching Sam and Scout. It's just samandscout.com. I don't write there as much as I would like to, but I do love it. And then you can find me on Instagram at Sam and Scout.
Awesome. And y'all, I wanted to remind you that I just released the first bonus superlatives episode to my Patreon subscribers. It features 5 superlatives picks, each from Christina Areola, the senior books editor at Bustle, Sarah Hildreth from Fiction Matters, and author Claire Gibson. You can join for $5 a month. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio. And now would be a great time to join because I'll be doing some fun year-end content just for patrons, while the regular podcast goes on break in December. Next week will be a full-length episode featuring the author of one of my top books of 2019 and a book that I think every single American needs to read. That's Garrett M. Graff, the author of The Only Plane in the Sky, which you all have heard me talk about a lot recently. You don't want to miss this one. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at www.sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions. You can find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. And if you'd like to get exclusive bonus episodes of the podcast, you can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/sarahsbookshelves. And there's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Thanks for listening.